good evening and welcome back to Two-Way Talk on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm Anthony McCarthy.
And I'm Carol Williams.
Dr. Amesh Adalja is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins University Center for Health Security. His work is focused on emerging infectious disease, pandemic preparedness, and biosecurity. Dr. Adalja has served on U.S. government panels tasked with developing guidelines for the treatment of plague, botulism, and anthrax in mass casualty settings and the system of care for infectious disease emergencies. And as an external advisor to the New York City Health and Hospital Emergency Management Highly Infectious Disease Training Program, as well as FEMA Working Group on Nuclear Disaster Recovery. He has been deployed to Haiti after the 2010 earthquake, and he was also selected for mobile for their mobile acute care strike team. Dr. Dodge's experience is frequently sought after by the international and the national media. Dr. Adalja, we really appreciate you joining us today. We just have some questions just to keep our listeners updated on the latest developments when it comes to COVID and other things. Thank you for being here today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
So we're curious about the Delta variant and new variants as they are coming along. Can you give us any information that you may have about the current status of the Delta variant and other variants?
Well, the Delta variant is the variant that has basically engulfed the entire United States. And if you get infected, you will be infected with the Delta variant. And what makes this variant so special is that it is much more contagious than other versions of the virus that we've seen before.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear that it's more serious, but if you're an unvaccinated person, the Delta variant will find you. And that's what's made it such a difficult thing to control, because it's so contagious and we've got so many people that are not immune in the United States. And it really threw the control of the virus that we had into haywire.
Mm.
When it comes to other variants, you have to remember that the virus has been mutating since it's been in humans, and there's going to be a lot of different variants that you hear about, most of which are not going to have major consequences, but there are others, like the Mu variant, for example, that have some concerning mutations. But one of the kind of paradoxical things is, because the U.S. is hit so hard with the Delta variant, it's very hard for any of these other variants to even get a toehold here, because Delta outcompetes them.
Mm. So could you tell us a little bit about, a lot of our callers call in, and one of the reasons they argue for not getting vaccinated is that vaccinated people, these breakthrough cases that people are talking about, can you put that into some context for us?
You have to remember that vaccines are not bug zappers. They're not force fields.
That's right.
They're meant to do, what they're meant to do is prevent serious disease, hospitalization, and death. And by that metric, all three of the COVID vaccines available in the United States are performing off the scales.
Mm-hmm.
And breakthrough infections were always expected. And the fact that they're occurring shouldn't be surprising. And when you hear about breakthrough infections and the fact that most of them are so very mild that they don't require medical attention, that's something to say is a success of the vaccine, because the vaccine is performing exactly as we want it to.
Mm-hmm.
We know that this virus isn't going anywhere, and probably everybody eventually is going to get it. But it's much better to get COVID after you've been fully vaccinated, because it's going to be mild, like many of the other respiratory viruses we deal with year in and year out. And the vaccine saves lives. And just look at a hospital and see who's getting hospitalized.
That's right.
Who's dying. It's the unvaccinated.
So there has been a bunch of news, of course, in the last week, as the president has now mandated that federal employees be vaccinated. He said that he's growing impatient. He really wants us to move ahead. And the way we move ahead and get ahead of the variant or the virus is if people get vaccinated. What did you think of that mandate?
I think, for example, you have to kind of split it apart, and I think it's true that we cannot move past this pandemic until we've got more people vaccinated, and that it is also the case that all of us that are vaccinated are getting very frustrated with
of
the
course.
Unvaccinated, because that's what's causing all of the issues that we have now. And when it comes to, for example, healthcare workers, I do think the president was on very strong ground saying that healthcare workers need to be vaccinated, and that hospitals that participate in Medicare and Medicaid need to make that a condition of that should be a condition of participation. That's something that I think makes a lot of sense. It's also really important to vaccinate the federal workforce as well as federal contractors. Where I think it's a little bit troublesome is with using OSHA, or the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, to make a mandate for people, for employers that have more than 100 people, because I think what this is, this is something that shouldn't have come to the point where the government is doing this from OSHA.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses should have saw this as a way to ensure their workforce, their workforce safety, their workplace safety. And I think this is where you're going to see more resistance to the president's plan.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, I think that the plan is the spirit of the plan is correct, because it is true that this vaccine is life-saving. This vaccine is the way to put the pandemic in the rearview mirror, and it is really inexplicable that people are shunning it voluntarily, because what's happening in the United States now is self-inflicted. This is willful. This didn't have to be this way.
Yeah. Do you have anything?
No, I didn't. Not yet.
Okay. I do want to ask you, because you did make a very good point about the federal guidelines when it comes to employees of a certain size. The governor of our state says that he doesn't believe in putting restrictions on local businesses, but he believes local companies should be mandating themselves, not taking government direction, but for themselves, mandating the vaccinations for their employees. A lot of people believe he just needs to make a decision and offer some guidance to local employers, but he believes it's something that should be done at the local level. Give me your thoughts on that.
I think that every company should really be thinking, how can I keep my workers safe? How can I continue to operate in a pandemic?
Mm-hmm.
How can I keep my customers safe? And the best way to do that is to have everybody vaccinated on your workforce.
Mm.
So it's not something that I think needs the federal government. It's not something that I think needs the state or local government to do. This is something that businesses should do just as a business continuity decision. It's something that's going to make them resilient to the pandemic. And we've seen many businesses do that. For example, United Airlines, Amazon, Google. And I think that local businesses should be doing that as well. This is something that's really important to keep yourself able to operate when you've got a pandemic going on right outside your doors and you've got a simple solution to it. So I think it's sort of a failure of the whole system that we're now seeing this become an OSHA issue, because it should never have gotten that far. People should have been doing this willingly, because this vaccine is something that is of such tremendous benefit to everyone who gets it that it's really mind-boggling to me that we're having this problem with only where we have, half the population not vaccinated. And it's something that we that work on pandemic preparedness didn't think we would be facing. We thought the difficulty would be getting the vaccine and distributing it and putting, not the fact that people are willfully just not wanting it.
So Dr. Adaja is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. He's only going to be with us for a little bit more time. So if you have any questions, please call in at 410-319-8888 and ask your questions so he has a chance to answer them. We love it when we have him on the air. He offers such great explanations and updates on this deadly, deadly virus. 410-319-8888.
Dr. Adaja, a lot of our listeners are reluctant to take the vaccine because of the ingredients, whether they don't know what the ingredients are or whether they don't understand the ingredients. Are some of the ingredients in the vaccine, or have they been used in other vaccines, and are they basically the same ingredients across all three vaccinations?
There's a little bit of differences. So the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines do use a new technology, a really exciting technology called mRNA technology, and these are the first human vaccines that have had this technology, but that's not something to be worried about, because this has been something that's been studied for decades in animals, and we've vaccinated hundreds of millions of people all around the world and have not seen any major issue with that. When it comes to what else is in the vaccines, it's pretty much preservatives and stabilizers that we see in many of the vaccines. There are some little fat molecules in the vaccine also that help it get absorbed by cells. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine uses a different type of technology. It uses another virus to kind of deliver the SARS-CoV-2, which is the cause of COVID-19, the spike protein. That's not very different than normal vaccines that we've seen, and Johnson & Johnson has used this technology in their Ebola vaccine, for example. So it's nothing that's should be worried that people should be worried about. I think that these vaccines are some of the safest that we've seen, mm-hmm. and in the midst of a pandemic, the risk benefit calculation favors getting vaccinated in almost every circumstance. Mm.
Let's go to the phones. Tracy's on the line. Tracy, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hi. Good afternoon or good evening. I have a question for the doctor in reference to the boosters. I'm curious to know that they're saying that there should be an eight-month window of time before the boosters, before you should actually proceed in getting mm-hmm. the booster. My question to you is, say, for instance, if Pfizer gets those done quick enough, in which I have gotten the Pfizer vaccine, and I get my booster, what happens to the people who have maybe taken Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, and they have not met that window of time for that 8 months or so for a booster? Mm-hmm. There's something, I mean, what happens to those people if that, again, that window of time is not met?
So it's important to remember that this whole booster discussion isn't over yet, and the White House announced the need for boosters kind of before we got the clinical data to show that they're needed. And to me, I think the threshold for boosters would be to see breakthrough infections occurring that are severe enough to land people in the hospital, and that's just mm-hmm. not happening. So I think it's premature to really know exactly what's going to happen with the boosters, but it probably will be the case that Pfizer would be the first because they've got more data because they were first, and then the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson would follow. But I would stay tuned on the boosters. I think that there's going to be a lot of debate and discussion over the next week or so whether or not we're ready to pull the trigger on boosters, and it's not something that I think is a clear decision, especially for healthy people.
Thank you, Tracy. Let's go to Linnell. Linnell, welcome to Two Way Talk.
Hi. My name is Linnell. I have one serious question.
Okay.
For those individuals who have had, like they say, pre-existing conditions, like I know of someone who'd already had Guillain-Barré syndrome from a virus in their body back in 2011 or 12 or whenever it was. And if that person is resistant because they're fearing that taking one of these shots will trigger some things in their body that they maybe lie dormant, can you speak towards that? And then, and there's another way of handling this pandemic without the vaccine. I know this is a vaccine, pro-vaccine discussion, and I'm not against vaccines. But what I'm saying is there something else that is the medical field is talking about for people who can't get it?
Doctor?
So if someone's had a reaction to a prior vaccine or has a history of Guillain-Barré syndrome, there's no reason they can't get the vaccine. I think it's something that if they're worried about, they can speak with their doctor. And remember, when you get these vaccines, we're monitoring safety pretty extensively. And I've mm-hmm. seen no signal that people who've had Guillain-Barré syndrome have any issue with these vaccines. The second part of the caller's question was about any other way to handle this pandemic outside of the vaccine. And I would say the vaccine is the best and easiest way to deal with it because this virus is not going anywhere. It's going to be with us basically forever. And our goal is not to eradicate it or eliminate it. That's impossible. It's to remove its ability to cause serious disease, hospitalization, or death. And the vaccine does a great job at that. We also have other tools that we use, like testing, like masks, like social distancing, like the treatments in the hospital, but they all pale in comparison to the power of the vaccine. The vaccine, if you've got it available, that's the way we deal with this, because we saw with the pandemic what we did without the vaccine. We had 600,000 plus people die. We had massive economic shutdowns and disruptions of hospitals. So the vaccine is the key to putting this pandemic in the rearview mirror.
So I know you've got to go. Let me ask you one more quick question, and I'm sure you can answer it quickly, about misinformation. There's so much information online, and Kara and I get we get confronted with this every day when we have health professionals such as yourself on. People say, oh, they read such and such. How can people, or what source would you suggest people go to that is a trusted source?
It's very difficult because there's so much misinformation out there, especially on social media,
yeah.
that the person in the general public can't tell what's real and what's not.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that some of the mainstream media, especially the science reporters and the science pages that you might see in the New York Times or the Washington Post, are really good sources. The CDC is an excellent source as well. And then I also would say that there are some science magazines, things like National Geographic or mm-hmm. STAT, which is one of a great website for science that's run by the Boston Globe, Scientific American, all of those are going to be good sources of information. But I would just be really wary of what you see on social media. Go to the primary source, go to the websites, and and things that are going viral on social media are more likely to be something not to put much trust in.
Dr. Amesh Adalja is a senior scholar at the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
So, folks, you can